Here's a peculiar fact. Emma Watson, Stephen Fry, and countless other thoughtful atheists keep a book about religion on their shelves, not to mock it, but to learn from it. This isn't some spiritual crisis or hedged bet on the afterlife. It's recognition of something we've been reluctant to admit, that in our rush to escape religious dogma, we may have abandoned some of humanity's most sophisticated tools for living well together. Think about it. When Christianity swept across Europe, it had no qualms about stealing good ideas. Midwinter festivals became Christmas. Pagan temples were literally occupied and repurposed. Epicurean philosophy got repackaged as monasticism. The early church was less concerned with originality than effectiveness. Yet modern atheists often refuse to touch anything with religious fingerprints, as if wisdom becomes contaminated by its theological packaging. We've created a false choice: either swallow supernatural claims whole or reject everything religion's ever figured out about human nature. This binary thinking has left us impoverished, living in a world where we've lost the script for how to comfort the grieving, build genuine community, or mark life's significant transitions with anything more meaningful than a restaurant reservation. Walk through any major city and you'll see thousands of people, yet we're more isolated than villagers who knew everyone within 5 miles. We've sorted ourselves into narrow tribes defined by education, profession, and income, our interactions serving 3 purposes: making money, climbing socially, or finding romance. Everyone else becomes invisible. This alienation coincided with 19th century faith becoming private. Religion moved from public squares into private hearts, and we lost the social technology that came with it. Catholic Mass gathered people across class lines, diminished status markers, and created moments where strangers acknowledged shared vulnerability. You didn't need success to belong, just humanity and flaws. Modern restaurants gather people, but never transform strangers into friends. We reinforce tribal divisions through small talk, designed to impress rather than connect. Imagine an agape restaurant, deliberately mixing social groups with conversational prompts for authentic revelation. The formality generating emotional intensity casual settings can't achieve. Religions also solved problems within communities. Consider Yom Kippur, the Jewish Day of Atonement. Its genius is making apology seem like nobody's particular idea. It's just what the day demands. By proclaiming human error as universal truth, confessing specific infractions becomes easier. We need rituals that make reconciliation feel natural rather than awkward. Modern politics champions freedom from moral judgment, yet our public spaces overflow with commercial messages deploying extraordinary talent to make us crave products, not virtues. Christianity never hesitated to create moral atmospheres. Padua's Scrivegni Chapel displays Giotto's 14th century frescoes depicting 7 virtues facing 7 vices. Anger tears her garments. Infidelity squints with deceitful eyes. Congregants contemplated which virtues they'd embraced and which vices they'd succumb to. Original sin offers solidarity in imperfection. When challenged, "Who are you to tell me how to live?" a believer responds, "A fellow sinner." This avoids the arrogance plaguing secular moral instruction. Christianity recognized that our concepts of good and bad are shaped by those around us. To address the shortage of paragons, Catholicism presents 2,500 saints, each exemplifying qualities worth nurturing. Even without religious belief, we need patron saints of courage, friendship, patience, and skepticism, not just film stars and singers as role models. We believe education solves society's problems, yet universities excel at imparting information while ignoring wisdom or meaningful living. History students study 18th century French agriculture with little connection to navigating heartbreak, career disappointment, or moral dilemmas. The divide between secular and religious education lies in purpose. Christianity views humans as desperate, fragile, vulnerable, sinful creatures needing guidance over abstract knowledge. secular lectures impart information, Christian sermons transform lives with practical advice on the soul's challenges. Christianity also recognizes akrasia, our tendency to know what's right but lack strength to act. The mind is sluggish and fickle, requiring education engaging both reason and emotion. Universities assume monotone lectures suffice. Religions understand wisdom needs eloquent delivery and constant repetition, creating calendars ensuring regular revisitation of important concepts. While secular society privileges novelty, religions understand transformation requires ritual reinforcement. We don't need more information. We need better mechanisms for remembering what already matters. In chapels worldwide, desperate people seek comfort from maternal religious figures. Marian devotion may seem childish, but the relevant question isn't whether Mary exists, it's what our need to invent her reveals about us. Catastrophic events strip away our maturity, throwing us back into helplessness. Christianity wisely reframes vulnerability as virtue, correcting our tendency to divide adult and childhood selves. Religion offers maternal comfort without forcing us to confront our desire for an actual mother, providing the imaginative pleasure of being cared for by a universal parent. The Marian cult suggests that even hard-headed atheists remain vulnerable at heart. Secular culture could create temples to tenderness, spaces where we contemplate art centered on parental care in twilight ambience. There's no shame in needing comfort. The shame is in pretending we've evolved beyond it, then suffering alone when crisis reveals we haven't. Christianity's pessimistic thinkers console rather than depress. Blaise Pascal's Pensée declares happiness an illusion and misery the norm, yet offers profound comfort to those in despair. We're cast into gloom not by negativity, but by hope. The gap between grand aspirations and reality generates disappointments that embitter us. Relief comes when an author confirms our worst insights are mankind's common reality, opening opportunities for communion around shared darkness. The modern secular world maintains irrational devotion to improvement narratives based on messianic faith in science, technology, and commerce. Material progress since the mid-18th century has undermined our capacity for pessimism and therefore our sanity. Christianity wisely locates expectations in the next life, recognizing politics can't create perfect justice, marriages will have conflict, and money never delivers security. Religious pessimism particularly benefits marriage, which secular society has made hellish through the astonishing supposition it should be entered primarily for happiness. Pessimism doesn't preclude joy. Pessimists may have greater appreciation capacity than optimists, being amazed by modest successes that occasionally break across their darkened horizons. The Book of Job offers consolation through its refusal to provide simple answers. When Job questions God, the deity responds not with explanations, but with thunderous questions. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? This whirlwind speech evokes nature's immensity, helping Job accept life's incomprehensible tragedies against eternity's backdrop. Without reminders of the transcendent, we risk imagining ourselves masters of destiny until we collide catastrophically with reality. Being humbled by something larger isn't humiliation, it's relief from our insane ambitions. For secular people seeking awe, the stars offer the best access point. Contemplate light years, hypergiant stars like VY Canis Majeris, the universe's 3 septillion stars. When your relationship ends or career stalls, remember you're standing on a rock hurtling through space at 67,000 miles per hour. Your problems are real, but they're also cosmically insignificant, and there's strange comfort in that. The interesting question isn't whether God exists, it's what we've lost by abandoning the social technologies religions developed over millennia. We need rituals for grief, structures for community, reminders of our smallness. The wisdom of faiths belongs to all mankind. We can steal what works, just as Christianity once did. We can build institutions that address our highest needs, not just our hunger and convenience. The question isn't whether you believe, it's whether you're willing to learn from those who spent centuries figuring out how fragile, forgetful, social creatures might live together with meaning and grace.